WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Close proximity, past history, unexpected surprise. What do these common phrases have in common? Well, they're redundant. Think about it. Close proximity, past history, unexpected surprise. Can there be an expected surprise? Here are a few more. Added bonus. You've heard that one, right? Sudden impulse, passing fad. And that's just a partial list from Random House's chief copy editor, who says, cut these redundant phrases from your writing. Now, common couplings of words and why we use them are just some of the many, many language-related things that my next guests are obsessed with. With me now are ardent language lovers, Martha Barnett and Grant Barrett, co-hosts and producers of Away With Words, a show about language and linguistics that airs on WNY. E? Where is that, just so people know?
That's here in New York City.
No, I know. It's on the dial.
Oh, 91.5.
Yes.
And the format, it's basically an hour-long weekly show where people call in with every and any question about words and language and how we use them. Hi, Martha. Hi, Grant. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, thanks. I was waiting for free gift.
That's a good one. So I just went through that list of redundant phrases. What's your take? Bad writing, or does the second word add needed emphasis, or just color sometimes?
A color, the American instinct for hyperbole and emphasis and exaggeration. We want more. We want extra. We want heaping helpings of language, and we add, we pile on.
We have, so that's why we do this. That's why English has a Department of Redundancy Department.
That's correct.
Listeners, let's have some fun here. We want to open up the phones with a question our guests posed on their show not long ago and got some interesting answers. So listeners, are there words and phrases that you misunderstood for an embarrassingly long time? Maybe you thought that money laundering literally meant washing drug-laced dollar bills, or that AM radio stations only broadcast in the morning, AM. What's a word or phrase that you misunderstood for an embarrassingly long time? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And you can also call in with any, and I mean any, word-related thought or question. These guys were born to riff. So what's a word you can't stand, or a word you've been hearing a lot lately and thought, where did that come from? Or whatever your question is, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So while we're getting some calls from our listeners, you get calls on all sorts of random word questions. One recent caller complained that on NPR, singled out NPR, as well as cable news, people keep starting sentences with the word so.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. As we are an NPR affiliate, I feel we should address this. Is starting a sentence with so a new thing? Where did it come from?
It's not new, but people noticing it is new, which is kind of strange.
Yeah, it is. It's something that linguists refer to as sentence initial so. And it takes the place of well. I mean, saying well at the beginning of a sentence is pretty weird.
Right, a bridge between thoughts. So the questioner, you, asked me a question. And I want to indicate that I'm following your thought, and I'm giving you what you prompted me for. And so I'll throw out a so at the beginning of the sentence. And so when we came to New York City, we blah, blah, blah. And it's a natural kind of way to flow the conversation instead of an abrupt start.
Yeah. And I think it is much more in use today than it was a decade or more ago.
Yes.
And I've had complaints when it's been used on this show, sometimes by me and sometimes by guests, from some listeners who object to it like your caller did. I personally don't have a problem with it because I think in the way you just described, it is kind of a connective tissue mm-hmm. between the question and the answer. It's not like well, which is just a pause.
Yeah, I think that it is more common now because those things are infectious. We learn from people we respect and trust. And if you're listening to the radio, there are a lot of people you respect and trust. But we have some evidence, we meaning linguists and people who study this stuff, back as far as the 1980s. And so there's some suggestion that this might have been first popular in the tech world, where you had to explain really complicated subjects to people who might not understand them.
Here's another redundancy being suggested by Bill in Brooklyn. Bill, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Hi. My personal opinion. An opinion could be anything other than personal.
Right, as opposed to your someone else's opinion.
If you're a spokesperson, maybe you need to say that, right?
Yeah, my personal opinion as opposed to what my organization takes as an official position. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it can be. Stephen Ermont, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hey, Brian, thank you. Hey, you know what? How about this? I cringe. Every time I hear someone say the word "nother," there's no such word. We're going to take it to a whole nother level. It means it's nother. There's
That's
no
right.
such word. And you want to know something? When I hear it, even in public, I actually say to the person who said it, by the way, that's not a real word, no matter what the consequence may be.
Steven, thank you very much.
Steven needs to get his heart
dear.
Medicine.
Another popular word I've heard added to the end of a lot of sentences, like we were talking about so at the beginning, is the word right. Not as a question, but this also has become much more common at the end of a declarative statement.
Mm-hmm.
You'd hear it on a lot of explainery podcasts. You know, after speaking for a long time, someone will finish a sentence. I don't know. I'll make one up. So that's the reason it's not a state of emergency at the southern border, right? But they're not really asking.
They're seeking confirmation that you listened and that you're a part of the conversation and that you're following the thought. We have a lot of these discourse devices that we throw out there. Sometimes it's a nod. Sometimes it's just a noise. Sometimes it's a hand gesture. And right is one of those. I first heard this here in New York City in the 90s among people from Long Island. I'm not saying that's where it's from, but I picked up the habit and I've been accused of overusing right as a kind of sentence tag to seek confirmation.
It's also a way of holding on to the microphone, you know?
Right.
Because you can just say right and not wait for the person to answer you.
Yeah. But like so, it's a connective
yeah.
tissue.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of that. And I appreciate when people notice it because it means that you're getting beyond, say, grammar school grammar.
Uh-huh.
You're starting to see what's really happening in language. And if your first instinct is to peeve about it or complain, what you do is you move to the next step and start gathering evidence. Who's doing it? Why? What possible use could it have?
Zach in High Falls, you're on WNYC. Hi, Zach.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What you got?
I, you know what drives me crazy is when people use the word Trump as a verb. They can't stand it, and it feels like it just continues to empower somebody who really doesn't deserve to be synonymous with
I see.
Better.
So you know? Do you have, since Trump actually is a verb or could legitimately be used as a verb, this trumps that. I guess it comes from bridge.
Excise that from our language.
Right. So my question, Zach, is take the next step. Do you have any synonyms that we could replace the common usage of Trump with?
Pelosi?
Touche. You guys devoted a whole section of your show to how, when it comes to the names of towns and cities, the locals don't necessarily pronounce them the way people from elsewhere expect. Charlotte, Vermont, for example. You want to take that one?
Yeah, that's Charlotte. It was named for the wife of one of the kings of England. And yeah, it trips up everybody. I'm from Kentucky, and we have so many of those. Baghdad and Cadiz and Cairo.
And it came up on the show just the other day. I think it's Concord, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
But same spelling, Concord, Massachusetts.
I love it. I love it. And that's how you tell who an outsider is. Do you belong? Do you speak like we speak? And it's not just place name. Sometimes it's the little bit of the vowel change or the lexical preference. And of course, New York City has one of the most famous ones that linguists talk about all the time. And we just got off at the Houston Street stop.
Here's an English teacher, Crystal in Brooklyn. Hi, Crystal.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What's your question, or do you have an example of something to throw in?
I have an example. I'm an English teacher. I've been teaching English for 10 years. I'm currently teaching in East New York, Brooklyn, 8th grade.
Mm-hmm.
But over the course of my experience as an educator, I have become more and more frustrated with the use of the word mine being pluralized as mines. And this is from students and adults alike. And I could use it in a sentence. They say, oh, that's mines, in regards to something that belongs to them. And I'm not quite sure where the overgeneralization comes from, or if you have an answer or maybe a suggestion as to where it came from. But it is running rampant, and it is just bizarre, to be quite frank.
Are you noticing a pattern among the people who use it? Like, are they from a certain place or have a certain background?
So predominantly I teach in a lower socioeconomic population. However, I notice it with everyone in terms of the Latin American and African American culture especially.
Interesting.
At first I thought it was an English language learner, just discrepancy in terms of learning the new language. But now as an educator, I see other educators and hear adults use it as if it's correct, but I've never even heard anybody use it before. So, yeah.
That's a fantastic field report. I love that. You're on the front lines. You've gathered the evidence. And I can tell you that this pluralization of mine has existed for hundreds of years in some dialects spoken in the UK and Scotland and Ireland. And it's a real interesting phenomenon. I wouldn't go so far as to say that it exists in a dialect here, but it's certainly you're gathering evidence that we could analyze and try to figure out what is happening with this new language.
Thank you, Crystal. So is the word whom dead?
Oh, is the word whom dead? What do you think, Brian?
I think it's not entirely dead, but I think it's become entirely optional.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Yeah, it's on life support, I'm
afraid. It is, yeah. Whom? Although I love the new version, the humorous version, whomst, which they're using online.
Oh, I hadn't seen that one yet. And it doesn't really mean anything different from who. It's just sort of was convention or considered proper that it would come after a preposition, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little of a shibboleth now. You show off your erudition by using whom.
Reggie in Park Slope. You're on WNYC. Hi, Reggie.
Hi. I had a question about something I've been thinking about for 50 years. Revenge is a dish best served cold. Does it mean if you want if you want to succeed at revenge, you should wait? Or does it mean that you're more likely to give up on revenge because you waited?
Wow. Mm. I have always assumed, Martha, that you wanted to wait because the things that you do in the fiery, heated moment of anger are unguided and unskilled. You want to calculate this revenge.
Right. Leave that email in your drafts folder until the next day.
There you go. We're just about out of time, but it doesn't have to be the last word because Martha Barnett and Grant Barrett will be at the Bell House tonight for a live event. That Brooklyn show starts at 8 o'clock, and I see tickets are $30, just so you know. You can't just show up and walk in. But you can find a link to the event on our website. Again, their fabulous podcast, Away With Words, airs on WNYE Radio. That's 91.5 FM on Friday afternoons at 1 o'clock. All right, we have a few seconds. I'll throw in one more quick question. Are texting, emoji, and the internet... forget that one.
They're not ruining language. It's
no,
fine.
They're not.
It's okay.
That's the question, and that's the answer. They're evolving it, right?
That's right. It's just another layer.
It's only people's ineffective communication that would ruin language.
That's right.
Right.
Thank you, guys. Really
fun.
Thanks so much.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Have a great weekend.